Good morning, good day. Здравствуйте, bonjour. Today is October 14th, 2012. It's now 8:24 a.m. here in the far corner of the North American continent we call the Pacific Northwest. I'm actually at the southernmost point of the Salish Sea, an 1,100-mile stretch of inland water that goes from Olympia, Washington to Alaska. And got a bunch of stuff today. Anyway, let's start with a little bit of business. And that is a progress report on the Stone Books Works. We've got now four different methods in development. One very far along, and this one I'll describe, and then tell you how to contact me if you'd like to take advantage of it. We have three other methods that are in various stages of development. One sort of coming along that'll maybe produce a prototype in about 3 to 4 weeks. But our very first one actually has prototype pages at the moment. So we'll concentrate on that. Here is a basic abstract of what we've got produced. These are 5-inch by 7-inch ceramic sheets that will fit into a book of 100 pages with 50 sheets, composed of 50 sheets. Hang on a second, I've got to go and shut that door. Sorry about that. Anyway, so we have a ceramic book of 100 pages composed of 50 sheets of ceramic. Ceramic's very thin. Ceramic's touted to last, each 5-inch by 7-inch sheet is touted to last about 30,000 years. If it lasted even a fifth of that, I would be very satisfied personally. The sheets are encoded with information through a laser etching process that then involves a sintering process to provide contrast. The sintering will not, we think, degrade the ceramic over time. Of course, if you're around in 6,000 years and we're wrong, you have every right to bitch. But in any event, the process involves etching these ceramic plates with a laser. Thus, we are able to produce, through this process, very intricate pages, including graphics, to some degree. The graphics, of course, need to be simple and well thought out, such as, geometric shapes. That's what we've been thinking of at the moment is encoding geometry and math and that kind of thing in terms of how to store knowledge. Back to the book itself, though. The idea is that these 5 by 7-inch sheets would be bound in a D-ring of titanium that would then go into a titanium housing for the book as a whole. So we're at the process where there's individual sheets being produced. We know some of the costs involved. It will be expensive, so this is not for your average home user, so to speak. At the point that the process can become perfected, we'll go ahead and see about distributing the ideas as to how it's done. Now, in terms of our organization, I'm not actually doing this. There's a fellow in that's volunteered and has gone off on his own initiative and produced this process. He's in Idaho. Function at the moment will be to act as a conduit to him. So if you're an organization or you're an individual with a lot of money and wants to buy a bunch of these books, you can go ahead and contact me at moon@halfpasthuman.com and put in Stone Books in the subject line, and I will pass your contact information along to the fellow that's actually producing these. Now, to give you an idea, a simple, not requiring a whole lot of setup and not requiring a whole lot of graphics, because that's an issue. The more you use the laser etching on the ceramic sheet, the more you approach a failure point of the ceramic sheet itself. In other words, you could etch it right away, so to speak, to the point where it wouldn't necessarily survive. But also, the etching process itself uses electricity and so on, and thus the more you do, the more expensive it is. So we're talking a generalized 5 by 7 inch booklet of a simple form might run $3,000 or $4,000 at a minimum kind of a cost, and the more complex you get, the more expensive these books will become. However, there's going to be break-even points in terms of if you wanted to have quite a few of them produced, then the guy who's doing the production can take advantage of some small level of a scale and get you, you know, some decent kind of prices on quantity, because it then sets it up into production. So I'm thinking that if you're an organization, you want to store permanent records, you want to have genealogical information stored for family groups in a permanent format. You want to be altruistic and store general educational kind of information into the future in terms of 5,000 and 6,000 and 7,000 years into the future. This is a viable format, probably the first on the planet to do so, because we know that all the electronic media, if there is any of the electronic media from the past that has survived, we as a species are generally ignorant of it. I'm not saying that the military at all don't have some, and the shadow ops people may have well have discovered things that were indeed electronic and cracked the codes and so on. But in general, we don't see such items being reported as surviving through history. What comes through history is such things as papyrus and metallic sheets, etc., and stone. So this was our idea of the stoneworks. Anyway, so this is process number one. The fellow that's producing it is in the western states out here. He's ready to go. He's eager. And his costs are reasonable given the quality of the production that comes out. You'll have to work out individual issues with the books with him, because he'll be doing the work for you. I'll just act as the conduit, so that he doesn't have to deal with a lot of FaceTime with the general questions. So if you're a reporter, if you have any other issues with this other than actually purchasing a book, you need to deal with me on it, simply because the guy is doing the engineering and doesn't have the time to screw around with it. He doesn't want to do the upfront stuff because of the huge amount of work involved in producing these. Bear in mind, he's engineering something that is basically going through time. An individual time capsule of a real level of surety and certainty. So, again, if you want one of these things, be prepared to spend on the order of thousands of dollars per book. Depending on complexity, contact me at moon@halfpasthuman. I'll pass you on to the fellow doing the work, and from that point on, it's up to the two of you to put a deal together for you. Any other questions, contact me about the process. Now, we've also got three other processes that are in various stages of development. The one that's most promising in terms of production quality basically is a slurry process involving a 3D page from a 3D printer. It's slower to produce than the laser etching, and it has less resolution, but it can produce vast quantities cheaply once the first master page is produced. The idea on this process would be that it would cost you about $4,000 to $5,000 to produce several hundreds of pages of master sheets, so to speak. And then those could be used until they wear out, and we don't have any idea as to how long that might be, because they're being impressed in a very high-grade but low-abrasive slurry. So they might produce literally tens of thousands of pages each. That process, of course, you'd have to really think about what you're going to want to produce, because the idea is to do mass production and then stash them around the planet. That sort of thing. But it also gets you storage through time. The slurry you would be pressing into in this case could be manufactured locally. So the idea then would be that you would just contact Central Point. They would produce the 3D image for you in whatever language format, ideograph, you know, it doesn't matter, kanji, Chinese, Sanskrit, graphics, etc., would be produced and then sent to you, and then you would set up a template that would impress into local slurries that are cheaper to produce there than to ship stone all around the planet. The other one, with the process number one, has very thin ceramic sheets that are pre-fired before the etching process. Here you would be dealing with local slurries. We're about a month out on our first production run on pages, and I'll let you know how that goes. So, on to other items real quick. Yeah, so we're out of our business mode there. Let's go on to general weird stuff out there. Okay. We've got the surfacing of the pedophilia scandal is now moving into the media, to what we call mainstream media or the propaganda whore press. The prostitutes will attempt to deflect and degrade through attrition, basically, the whole pedophilia scandal moving into the entertainment industry. But what we're looking for in our next set of temporal markers is, let's call it a jump of the main the main focus of the pedophilia scandal going from Britain and branching out. Now, it's going to be really weird because this is going to be a tactic that's going to be used on the part of the media in Britain that touches the royal family, those the evil Satanist people that think that their blood is better than yours and they have the right to kill your children as they choose. Those people will do anything they can to prevent this scandal from coming too close to them. So they're actually going to take the tactic, according to our forecast, and a temporal marker we're looking for looks really close. But we think what they'll do is they'll take the tactic of splitting the blame and attempting to divert the blame, so to speak, from British media leading to the British royals family super directly. And so they'll start casting, trying to force some of the pedophilia stuff back on the Catholic Church and Ratzinger and his Kabbalist within that organization. And at the same time, there's going to be a splintering of the entertainment media industry thing, to where a lot of the pedophilia component of Hollywood and all the movies and the organization that produces all of these pedophilia supporting cartoons and all of that, the subliminals and all of that within the Western world, promulgated from what we call Hollywood, that'll come on out. Now, when that comes on out, that's when we expect a very large jump to occur in gold and silver. So this could be after the election. It could be before the election. I don't think so, because it's so huge, I can't see it breaking that rapidly. But that's just my monkey mind not being able to, I mean, it's just putting barriers on things. But what we do have is we have, through our associative algebra within our set theory, a linking between the rapid rise in gold and silver and the breaking of these temporal marker points relative to the pedophilic scandal and its impact on the triumvirate here of the prostitute whore press out of Hollywood, the blood-sucking Satanists out of London, and their associative association with the royal family, and which ain't royal at all and is hardly more than a criminal family, and the Ratzinger and the Catholic Church. So there was a within the data set, there was a endless involvement between these three, and it looks like the scandal that the way we think it'll play out is that the pedophilic scandal is going to come so not close to, because it's already been associated with them, but it's going to gain such an emotional component because of some stuff that's going to break real soon that will be devastating to the House of Windsor and the criminal family that they represent. And so they will actually attempt to shift blame and will sacrifice, in their minds, their co-conspirators in Hollywood and the Catholic Church. At that point, gold and silver are going to be really impacted by hyperinflation here in the United States. We have a situation now where we know that that temporal marker for the hyperinflation here in the United States and the death of the dollar has indeed been crossed. What we were looking for has occurred recently, in that the Chinese central bank has decided not to follow the Western banks with a hyperinflationary course within their currency. Now, the Western people are thinking that this is a temporary hold that's been placed on the action of the central bank due to the upcoming change in the Chinese leadership. I contend that this is not the case, and it actually represents a significant change in the Sino or Sinese Asian leadership into this upcoming century, and that they're going to do a very asymmetric move relative to the Western powers. I'm not going to discuss the details of what we think we know, but it's going to come out within the confusion period that follows the U.S. elections, and it will also impact the hyperinflation here in the United States, and it will affect the currencies globally in terms of how they relate to each other. And I can't go into the details the details when they come out will be obvious, and then you'll understand, aha, now I understand why I didn't want to talk about it. And it has to do with our association, our associative algebra. There are these things called unital associative algebras that resolve down to a state of one. We use a lot of those. Some classics are like the Clifford algebra is used in physics. I use a lot of those in our set theories, and they've been very, very, very rarely wrong, and it is these associative algebras that bring us the temporal markers within the predicate calculus. Now, predicate calculus is based on the idea of a predicate, a function that is associated with a number of variables or variable states. When you build a system as complex as ours, you stop looking at the individual deterministic nature of how the computer does things, and instead you look at the state of the data in its jitteriness, if you will, in its tendency towards change. And that's what really is our temporal markers. These are shown to us through our associative algebra. The associative algebra, because of the nature of the functions involved, has been rarely wrong. This last run has been seriously pointing towards these temporal markers relative to the gold and silver, relative to the confusion of the U.S. election, tied to this pedophilic scandal and its ramifications, which, again, we won't go into those at the moment. One of the reasons that I don't like going into some of these things is that I don't want to use some words ahead of time, because there is an emotional component to some of these words that would be lessened if they were out and about through a forecast. On the other hand, I will deliberately use some words to lessen their impact and thus cause issues for our collective enemy, the Kabbalist and the whoever the hell alien, you know, reptilian bastards are on the other side of them. I know that they want to use certain language and have a certain impact, and I can degrade that impact ahead of time by getting those words out there and getting them in circulation, because when words are in circulation, they have a tendency to lose emotional impact over time. This is one of the predicates of our work, as the how the emotional value of words flows through language over time and generations. Okay, so gold and silver are going to be going up, but it'll be relative to hyperinflation. It won't be good. Now, another thing. Relative to the hyperinflation and the response here in the United States, the Kabbalists have made certain statements recently and let out certain information that they believe, and they are of the opinion that there will be less issues here in the United States than they had initially anticipated with the collapse of the dollar. That will not be the case. They have misjudged things very, very badly, and the reaction that they are going to get will be extremely unexpected to them, but it will be extreme from their viewpoint because it will be unexpected. From their viewpoint, it'll come out of nowhere because all their forecasts say it shall not arise. In any event, though, what I need to get out there is, if you are awake and aware to what's going on during the economic crash and the upcoming problems, you will not participate in any large group actions. And another aspect of this, it'd be unwise to participate in meetings that are arranged through anonymous sources through internet connections, because the Kabbalists are going to use that as a tactic. They'll control the opposition. They'll set up, for instance, email chains that you might end up becoming part of through an association that they will engineer because they know who talks to whom, and they will do their sting kind of a deal where what they'll attempt to do is to get people of a like mind together. Now, let's use a far-out example here so that we don't use any of the trigger words. Okay, so there is a group of radical pacifistic Buddhists out there that will not tolerate are going to war with the Palladians. And so these radical pacifistic Buddhists are going to go and meditate over pies as a nonviolent response to the potential for war with the Pleiadians. So if you are of a like mind, if you are associative with this idea that you don't want to go to war with the Pleiadians also, and that you think this is a good idea, they may know, that is to say, they, the Kabbalists, may know that you're part of this like-minded group because of their networking software. And they will send you an email that seems to come from these pie-praying, nonviolent, anti-Palladian war Buddhists. And they will invite you to a meetup, or they will invite you to some kind of a response that will be an affirmative response to an indication that you're going to take a positive action. That is to say, you're basically going to get up off your butt and do something. That's what they're looking for in this round of stings. And they'll use that as their list for part of the roundup. They're also going to, of course, go out and scoop up anybody who's foolish enough to take part in mass mob action here in the United States. It will not be as in Spain. Spain and Europe took a much more civil approach. They have a much smaller military component within the overall social order of Europe. That's why they're not going to have the same level of reaction from government that we will see here. Now, bear in mind something. The Kabbalists have structured the planet that you live in very specifically. They set up Italy and the Catholic Church to control people with religion. They engineered Christianity from the Messianic Judaism that was causing the Romans problems, and they used it as mind control to bleed off energy that would otherwise go to Messianic Judaism or Messianic whatever that would cause them problems. They set up the Rabbinical Council Judaism to, again, bleed off energy that would cause them problems. They also have set up England as the banking and center of the pedophilia from that. They're using pedophilia, by the way, as the way in which they control everybody. That's how they control the Masons and all of the other things. It's the common tie through this whole globalist organization. Getting back to it, though, they set up England as the financial center. They set up the United States as the military center. So they will not allow a military a crisis to arise within the military center that threatens their military from their viewpoint. And now their military is intended to use the sons and daughters of everybody in the United States to crush any global rebellion through the use of all these high-tech devices remotely. Now, once this is threatened, they're going to react very badly. And so they probably will start reacting very badly just out of their fear once the populace of the United States becomes aware of how badly they've been screwed. That will occur within literally hours of the collapse of the food stamp system. It'll occur within hours of the collapse of certain other federal government control structures. So it will be very much more bloody here in the United States. I also am of the opinion that they indeed have mind control drugs on this young generation that is currently within the military, and that these individuals will kill their cousins, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, aunts, and uncles until they either get off of the drugs or kill themselves, or the drug supply is shattered and the military faces problems. Bear in mind that the reports out of Afghanistan and in Iraq are that the average is 26 psychiatrically effective drugs are being given, or chemicals are being given, to the average person out there fighting these days. So it's not like it was in Vietnam. It's an entirely different setup. These are not individuals who can make a decision. These are not simply brainwashed by the military's way of doing things individuals. These are individuals who are under psychiatric control through chemicals and will do as they're told up to a certain point. That point comes not from any, from my viewpoint, from my analysis, that the point of departure or breakdown does not come from a moral quandary, because all they have to do is push a button. They're trained to push a button. They've got drugs in their system. They're basically a zombie. They'll push the button. They don't care who's on the other end of the predator. In fact, they're rarely told that. They don't have any problems with killing this way. A lot of them, in fact, even enjoy it because of the mindset of the video games, which are supported by the military. If you have relatives over there in Afghanistan or Iraq, you know that, or anywhere, actually, any military base, you will note how prevalent the more horrifically terrible adult-level video games are, how they are free, how they, all the people in their off hours spend much of their time playing these things and self-brainwashing. So they will do as they are told, and they will assault the American populace. Do not doubt otherwise. There will be breakdowns when it comes to the level of pointing a rifle at a crowd and shooting. That's why they've got the police. Now, a lot of the police are also affected by these chemicals. The estimate is, well, look at this. We have a population here in the United States of America that is 5% of the global population or something close to that. Yet we're consuming 60%+ of all the psychiatric drugs. So you know that things are a little wonky. It's going to get really ugly here once it gets to the riot stage. But that, in my estimation, will be relatively brief. That I think it will be brief, because I believe that the drug situation will break down on the powers that be. The globalists will not be able to continue to supply these levels of chemicals. As these chemicals come out of these people's system, they will become extremely erratic, and the rigidity that is required in their mindset will fracture, and there you go. Basically, what we're looking at upcoming here is an asymmetric warfare between the globalists that want to have a new world order and control all of humanity for whatever evil end, consume children sexually and as food, that kind of thing, and the rest of us. And it will be a war between rigidity of thought that is necessary to support fascism and the idea of resilience and honesty of appraisal of the reality of our planet that is necessary to survive. Why is it that we don't have a fascist structure that survives? You have all these people that are academics that say, oh, well, there's this progress, and it goes from establishment of a tribe, and then they give you all the different phases of nation statehood that starts off as a dictatorship and gets overthrown, eventually goes to republics and then democracies, which is where we're at now, the most dangerous period. Then it goes into dictatorships again, and then they become highly oppressive, and then it gets overthrown, and so on. Well, here's my question. Why is there that flow? Why is there that sine wave through the social order? If fascism, as these people suggest, is going to be the thousand-year Reich or any of that sort of thing, why are we not still living under the overt oppression of the Roman system? I know that we're oppressed by the Roman cult, but why are we not walking around dealing with the guardians of the Roman structure, the Praetorian Guard, and the fascist system that used to exist under the Flavian Caesars? Well, it's because fascism does not work. It requires a rigidity of thought that cannot be maintained beyond a small, narrow band within a small, narrow band of a generation. So you'll find that on either side of the fascist generation that is now existent, there is a generation, their children and their parents and progenitors that don't go along with this bullshit. And so the fascism is doomed to die, even if successful, when the fascists themselves die, because they cannot promulgate it beyond that generation. It's like cults, okay? Psychiatry is actually a religion. Why is psychiatry a religion? Because the definition of a religion is a cult that outlives its founder, outlives the death of its founder. Well, you've got a guy all hopped up on cocaine, morphine, codeine, nicotine, caffeine, and a bunch of the other eens who invents this weird-ass idea that there's this science of the mind where you can use the mind to chase the mind, and it can cure the mind. and he develops a cult around it. And that cult includes all these people. They do a lot of thinking about it. This is a Zionist operation, by the way. And he eventually dies of his many addictions and corrodes himself to hell with cigar-induced cancers. And hey, psychiatry survives. But not because it has really any effectiveness, or they've never cured anybody, they've never effectively stopped anybody from doing anything bad to themselves, they don't really alter behavior unless they do it through chemicals, but it is in no way different in my mind than Scientology. Psychiatry and Scientology are very akin to each other because of the nature in which they approach the mind and how they're going at it. In fact, Scientology really is the new religion because it again survived the death of its founder and therefore is not a cult. It's the new religion of that's going to supplant psychiatry in the future, or that was their intent. So getting way back to our point here of the asymmetric warfare, that all of this is going on with the Kabbalist, which is affecting our money, which is coming from the temporal markers relative to the gold. Getting back to the idea that October 15th and the new moon and the period from that point on is going to be very telling for everybody, we come to the idea that there are temporal markers that are falling within the social or within the populous entity forecasts that also relate to some of the larger shifts in the social order seen in earlier altar reports. So some of the temporal markers I knew were long-term and they were going to take a while to show up, such as the food riots that take down the Vatican. Well, those will be before June of next year, likely. And the food riots that take down the ancillary federal government deep underground bunkers around D.C. will also be before June of next year. Now, are those food riots going to be as a result of the global coastal event and the impact on the food supply system breaking down and the large numbers of people that survive and the total absence of government that will occur? Or will they start occurring as a result of the hyperinflation here in the United States? We can't tell from our forecasts, but we do know that the period of the confusion that will stem from American election forward into December is going to present us with a number of temporal markers that are all squeezed back to back. A lot of them relate to the global coastal event. Some of them relate to the pending earthquakes. Some of them relate to the number of people fleeing. That's still on. So the Gulf Coast long-term flight thing from the old ALTA reports through the SHAPE reports is still on, and it turns out to be the sinkhole, which is now related to, or and somehow is going to be connected to the asphalt volcano in the Gulf and into New Madrid all the way up into Canada. So the impacts on Canada will be not only the people fleeing the impacts of the sinkhole and the release of the gases and so on in the Gulf, but also the alteration of the landscape that's going to occur as a result of this. So, promises to be a very full few months here as we go into early December. Now, let's also bear in mind that from early December, like December 2nd or 3rd, and I'll check with my astro guys because I've got a couple of really good guys with the ephemerae, and they'll be able to tell me. But they are, we're all of the opinion that from December 3rd onward, the Carrington Event Alignment Series is beginning, or has begun, or is stabilized, if you will, and it persists for a while. Again, I'll find out how long. The Carrington Event occurred in 1859. It's named after the scientist Carrington who described it. It was when the sun got really irritated and sent down an ejection that fried a bunch of the northern hemisphere by being in contact with by our burgeoning technology. So our telegraph lines, for instance, arced out and set brush on fire in Montana as a result of carrying all this high intensity electricity from the sun. So in 1859, that occurred. The theory is now that every transformer in the Northern Hemisphere would pop, and since we don't make transformers, we'd be without electricity for 10 or 20 years. I personally think that it won't last that long because the global coastal event is also part of this. As the sun expands and sends out these energy, bear in mind, we not only react to it on the surface of the Earth, but the center of the Earth reacts to that energy that goes right through us. All of those high-energy particles, X-rays, everything that just go beaming right through us, much of that gets captured by the plasma in the middle of the planet, converted into a higher degree of complexity, which creates new atoms. Those atoms are squeezed out into a confined space, causing an expansion of that confined space to ripple out all the way through the mantle to us. And so, sitting out here on the crust. And so we have an expansion of the planet that occurs at the same time, or as a result of the sun getting into this excitatory state, that it starts throwing stuff off, which is, there will be a higher degree of potential for excitement of the sun from December 3rd onward. That higher degree of excitement persists until the end of March, insofar as I understand it at the moment. And as I say, I'll validate that. Now, this brings us up to the global coastal event, the asymmetric warfare that's currently ongoing between the people as they become awake and aware, and the capitalists who want to enforce a perpetual fascism and child-eating and sexualizing regime on the planet forever for their own purposes. Now, in surviving all of this stuff and coming through all of this stuff, it's coming down to the duality that's expressed through resilience and flexibility versus the rigidity and the seeming strength that that offers. The seeming strength that is offered by the rigidity of thought and process and organization is going to crack. We'll see it crack all over. I think it's best at this point that individuals that want to get through all of this start emphasizing their own personal responsibility towards their individual resilience and honest appraisal of what's going on around them. In other words, there will come a time, if we're correct here, where we'll get beyond the abstractions of economic collapse and you'll be faced with actual food shortages. You need to make honest appraisals as to what's going on, your body, and so forth, to get through this and not react to the crap that will be pumped out through the prostitutes and the MSM that will try and herd the... that's what they're going to do. They're going to try and turn the sheeple into herds, try and turn the herds against each other rather than let them focus on the actual cause of their problems. So the divide and conquer sort of thing. To get through this now, bear in mind you will be offered a whole lot of advice. And in my opinion, you need to really stop and examine some of this advice and see where they're coming from. Don't accept any of this don't accept any of my BS here without going out and really looking at the reality around you and indeed seeing that some of this meshes up with conditions that you're going to be facing locally. Now, some of the advice that we're getting, I think, is counterproductive. And I saw some of it today at this natural news site, naturalnews.org or something. Guy's got this article out there saying, hey, to survive the upcoming economic collapse, you don't want to be, he said, I think his title was, you don't want to have ripped abs or something to survive the upcoming economic collapse. And his contention is that we're going to be facing hard times economically that's going to threaten our food supply, plus you may end up having no electricity, and all of which is true. And by the way, you're also going to maybe have to camp out if there's like earthquakes and stuff. And further, the contention is that you need to be carrying, if you're a male, I think 25 to 30% body fat is his contention. Now, bear in mind, he's talking about 25 or 35 pounds of body fat on his 200-pound person. His contention is, further, that's his predicate or his postulate here, that you need to be carrying this extra weight because it'll give you extra insulation, it'll give you extra calories to burn if you have to walk away from the global coastal event, and it will be generally good for you to have this blubber hanging around your gut to burn off later. Okay, so his contention is that the people that won't survive this are the bodybuilders, those people that are out there doing all the CrossFit stuff to where they've got 5% or less body fat, and they are running on that thin edge. To a certain extent, I agree with him on that, that, you know, the bodybuilders are an extreme example, though. I would agree with him. They are an extreme state of body mechanics that's supported by our social order, and they won't be able to do that once the social order and the just-in-time system collapses. However, his contention that you need to have this extra weight on you in order to survive the hardships that he cites as living in harsh conditions where you need to camp on the ground, or you have no electricity, therefore you're going to have to, or fuels available, therefore you're going to have to supply, sleep and keep your own body heat through the night, that sort of thing. That to a certain extent is true. However, the rest of it is all BS. If we look at the actual history of humanity, those people that survive crises are not carrying the extra weight. Though, in fact, humanity works best lean and mean. We have examples going back into the last century with the World War II and the march, the Death March to Bataan. Now, here was a situation where there were all these captives, American captives of Japanese Imperial forces, and because the Japanese Imperial forces were not mechanized, they were forced to march the captives to the camps, to the prisoner of war camps. The Japanese killed many of the captives along the way, thinking the captives were doing deliberate delaying tactics and attempting to influence the course of the war by their actions, which was not the case. Their captives were Americans who were not used to marching, who were part of a mechanized military, who were carrying the 25 and 35 pounds of body fat, and were not capable of walking 1,800 miles, or actually it wasn't nearly that, but it was about half that. It was about 900 miles, as I recall. Anyway, the total marching terrain-wise, not as the crow flies. Anyway, so the Americans, under the circumstances of the Bataan Death March, were falling to the wayside frequently because their bodies were out of shape and they could not keep up with the general long march. And so they were frequently killed because it was thought that these people were an impediment. Plus, the Japanese mindset did not understand what was going on, and they thought it an aggressive tactic. I'm not excusing the Japanese in any way, shape, for their actions here, but I want everybody to understand it was a collision of cultures that caused this to occur. Misunderstanding of what they were dealing with, and then now we can focus on the issue of that 25 to 35 pounds of body fat that this fellow over here at Natural News wants you to carry around in order to survive this. And I contend that it was those people that did not make it in the Bataan Death March. It was those people that did not make it in Vietnam who had to walk through the jungles. Especially if you're dealing with hot weather, body fat is an impediment to survival. At all levels. I mean, if you're talking about physical exertion, it requires more blood vessels. It requires more blood. It requires the heart to work harder. So the guy's contention at Natural News that this body fat is good for you, he has two small valid points. If you got to sleep on the cold and you got the body fat, well, that's insulation. He's got the other issue that you can burn that body fat to survive a little bit. However, I will also point out that if you are relying on burning body fat to survive in a calorie-restricted environment, you will die sooner than somebody who is already used to surviving on a calorie-restricted diet. So the people that were in the death camps all around the planet, from Serbia back through to the Nazis, those who died first in concentration camps were the heaviest. That's because they were unfit, and the carrying of the extra weight caused conditions that impeded their abilities to survive harsh conditions. So carrying this extra weight is not a good idea, and the guy needs to be taken to task, especially when you consider that his cited example of having to do things like walking. Well, walking's going to produce a lot of extra strain on your heart if you're carrying around extra weight. Again, also in a calorie-restricted environment, somebody who does not have to support, whose body is not attempting to support that extra weight by keeping those fat cells plump, will do a whole lot better. Also, by the way, just as an aside, bear in mind if you're ever forced into some kind of a march and there are grasses around, you can use grass and dew as an effective substitute for some period of time for regular food. Now, do not eat the grass. Don't swallow the grass because you can't digest it and it will just tear your gut to crap. But you can chew the grasses, release the chlorophyll. Chlorophyll is very close to hemoglobin, requiring merely an iron to magnesium molecule exchange in order to be the same. It provides energy as it breaks down. There are sugars within the grasses. Grasses are plentiful. They also provide water and dew. It is not an effective substitute for real nutrition, but it can get you by under extreme conditions for some period of time. So grasses and local microgreens. Now, if you're talking microgreens, you go ahead and you swallow those and you eat those, and they can keep you going for considerable lengths of time because they're fundamental nutrition containing micronutrients such as minerals, and minerals equals energy. It's another issue you get out of grasses is that if you can pull up the grass, couch grass especially, you chew the leaves of the grass and then you break off the node that goes to the root structure. The root structure is then you've got to scrape off all the dirt so you don't damage your teeth and you don't ingest anything you don't really want to. But then you can sort of just rub the root structure with your hands and peel off the outer layer of the couch grass roots, and you'll be left with this white pulpy mass that you can chew for a long period of time and release minerals into your system. Again, do not swallow it. You can't digest it. It's very, very much cellulose, but it's much richer in moisture than the surface grasses and has a different level of value for you. Couch grass roots like that can also be thrown into soups and so forth to provide a source of nutrients, but you take them out after you allow them to soak in the water, because you're just after the minerals that they bring it to the surface and not really anything else there. So that's a weird little aside for you, how to survive on grass as you walk from one part of the continent to the other. So anyway, though, my point being that to survive this is going to be require us to be fit. Most of us are not. The statistics coming out now are very terrible. The U.S. government, for instance, says that only one out of seven workers in the United States is actually fit. All the others have some form of chronic or transitory disease state that is affecting their ability to work. And it's even worse for them in the U.S. military. Actually, here's an argument against the guy at the Natural News. The U.S. military subjects their, at all levels, subjects their recruits to an 8-week to 20-week, depending on their specialty that they're going to be going for, period of intense training that they call basic training. And they're having huge levels of washouts because of fat guys. And it's gone down to the point where it's at the level of body fat much over 15%, which would still be quite considerable in my way of thinking, much over 15%, so impedes the level of progress that the military is thinking about doing body mass index checks just to eliminate the waste in time and energy of the huge washout factor, because they've been able to see that if you got this body mass index, you know, you're 85% higher washout. Well, it's kind of like a mixed blessing for them, because yes, it allows them to wash these people out earlier, but they've got a real problem with recruitment as it is. Not a lot of people want to go and do this stuff, and they need that specific generation and so on. So they really need to open it up. Now they're trying to do remedial fitness on a lot of these individuals that have been sitting around all their lives playing video games and have couch lock. And it's not going very well for the military as a whole. It's less of a problem for the Air Force than it is for the Navy and the Army. But nonetheless, as a whole, it's costing the shadow government all kinds of money and time because of what has occurred at the surface level of the planet with their pool of workers. And they're rather irritated. Now, we know why the globalists are doing it, because they want to pollute your body and mind and make you into a really good slave. But in order to do that, they've got to pollute your body to the extent that your mind is amenable to this. And when they do that, your body becomes, to a certain extent, less useful to them. And so it has caused real issues for them. So my contention is that the guy who wrote the article over at Natural News didn't really think this through, doesn't examine things historically, doesn't recognize that in the early 1900s, even here in the United States, from 1890 through 1907, I believe it was, and the crash of the economy at that point, that the average American walked 1,100 miles a year, and the average American was carrying a body mass fat level that hovered around 5 to 8%, and the average American was not that different from the average person around the planet. Slightly a little bit heavier even then. But not, depending on diet, you can see that people carry body mass levels around 4.5 to 5%, even in rice-eating countries. So it's a different way of thinking about it. His argument is spurious and could lead to erroneous conclusions that could get people killed. You got 35 pounds on you. And I don't have that extra 35 pounds on me, and we're the same size, we have the same lung capacity, basically the same level of endurance. I will be able to go further, longer, and endure more. And that's what we're coming up to, is it's an issue of endurance. The resilient and flexible will outlast the rigid and hard. And that's the basic duality that's being presented to us at the moment. We're seeing it all around, for instance, and the breakdown is happening as we speak. Anybody not observing it is not really paying attention. I don't think there's time for paranoia or anything anymore. I mean, we can't save it. Now we just have to react to it. So, unless the space aliens come on out of the interdimensional holes, or, you know, zip down here from space and start sucking up all the radiation from the nuke plants, we've got a really serious problem over these next couple of years as electricity goes away and we have a general collapse of an unsustainable growth-based structure. Sustainability, by the way, and Agenda 21 are spurious. You can't save anything at this point. To get involved in that is a waste of your energy. You need to be focused on different things in a different way, in my opinion. As we get closer to the undeniable point of breakdown, to where we see, for instance, the officialdom order its minions to shoot on the citizens of the North American continent because they're irritated because they don't have food in their food stamp, and social welfare system went bluey because of the electricity. At that point, everything changes, and at that point, the advice you're being given now, you'll have to implement. So it makes a lot of sense now to sit around and think to myself, does it really make sense, you know, advice A, or do I need to think about that in relation to what I'll need 6 months from now, 7 months from now, because we're that close to, within this period of time, between now and June 1, we're going to get hit by some form of extraterrestrial whatever that's going to cause either a solar expulsion, or causing a planetary expansion, which is really where my money is going. Not that I have any, but I'm willing to put 2 cents in a bet on that, as opposed to meteors. But something's going to occur causing these issues, leading to the breakdown of electricity and then the breakdown of the social order and then all of the stuff from the looting of the Vatican through to the disappearance of the government. During that period of time, I think it will be a little late to be making preparations to get fit or try and overcome the problems that will beset you. But on the other hand, look, you've got 6 months now. If you're suffering the problems of the psychiatric drugs, if you're suffering problems physically, you can do a lot to repair yourself in 6 months of dedicated, focused work. Now, I'm not saying you have 6 months. I mean, it may occur in February, it may occur in March, but every single day that you've got foreknowledge and you take that extra step and do those extra exercises or whatever, get you that much further along towards that preparation point. And of course, it's a range. It's never a goal. It's a life, basically. And we need to get fit because in order to go long, you got to be real strong. Now, I've recently gotten into kettlebells because I can no longer count on an effective environment outside for things like bicycling and other forms of exercise, and kettlebells can be done inside. This is an issue. I see a lot of people out jogging and bicycling, and chemtrails bring in vast quantities of aluminum, which you're more exposed to outdoors than you are in. That's basically what it comes down to, plus the radiation issues. Now, of course, the weather's starting to settle in on us here, although it's this sort of fake rain that the chemtrails bring. It's not a real rain. The plants are just not really reacting well. But in any event, so this whole get fit before you're forced to fight for it approach. And those people that are out there telling you, by the way, let's also dismiss a bunch of other stuff. You know, this fellow Jonathan Moore, I mean, I gave him the benefit of the doubt with his, info about the incoming crapola this last summer that was going to hit us in August or whatever. But this guy, he's just a fearmonger. I mean, I've listened to him a couple of times, and he's out there with, like, the Deagle dude promoting fear, fear, fear. Let's fear, fear, fear. You know, here's something else to fear. Let's worry about this guy. Let's fear this. Let's fear this. You notice he never offers solutions. He never offers practical advice. He never analyzes it. He's just out there promoting the emotion. So he's a fear porn guy, and I think you can just dismiss any of the crap that comes out of him at this point. Why there's all the disinformation is obvious. They need to control who's disinformation and who isn't is a level of opinion anymore. But it is quite obvious that the basic, at least it's obvious to myself and a few of the other guys that at least are reinforcing my opinion by talking to me, that shit's hitting the fan at the moment all around us. And the great unraveling or the great apocalypse, you know, the unveiling is all starting to come out. I don't worry about things like a Chinese invasion of the United States. I don't worry about 100,000 Chinese troops in Mexico. If there were 100,000 Chinese troops in Mexico, they've got other issues dealing with Mexicans than invading the U.S. And let's be really honest, 100,000 from any country, a million from any country cannot invade the United States. There's, in Washington State alone, I think there's 400,000 registered hunters. We're a good-sized standing army just in the people around here with rifles. And we're not going to take Chinese walking down the streets and, you know, tanks and all of that. It just isn't going to happen, people. You can stop worrying about that level of fear. But what you do need to worry about is the pollution that comes from the fear pornographers, and basically they're probably all of the rabid Christian stripe also. And let's, you know, say that these guys are working an emotional set, whatever drives them, whether they're paid to or it's their own emotional state that's driving them, they're not aiding things by getting out there and say, fear this, fear that, fear the other thing. We're near the end of it, though, because real soon we won't have the ability for these individuals to promulgate that message, and we'll be dealing with the real crap on the ground, which we are really at the moment anyway. Education, 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 and emotional control. And part of your education is to understand that in order to keep your mind sane or insane, stable and productive, you need a stable and productive body. You need to really examine what's going on relative to our food supplies, your food supply, and where it's going to be coming from in the future. And I'm not saying hoard food. I actually think that's rather impractical. Plus, I think if there's some form of mega die-off as a result of a global coastal event or whatever, scavenging on the world at the planet as it is at the moment is going to be an effective lifestyle for probably generations just because of the huge amounts of crap everywhere. And also, it's always better to have fresh food that you grow or locate yourself in any event. And we also now have to be concerned about, you know, radiation sources and all of this kind of thing. So it's going to be an interesting little bit. I've got to get some breakfast here, speaking of food. And do some more thinking. I've been working on Miller's book. Let's see, which one is it? Well, I've got both of Dr. Miller's books here. I'm working through them. I'm on the one now about the ESP, the hypnosis, and the biofeedback. I've got a couple of biofeedback devices, which they're not really adequate. I'm going to work on constructing another one and try some of his techniques before getting around to trying to get him in on an interview with one of these Wujos, which I can do through Skype. So that isn't a particular problem. But I want to go through some of his material so that we can have an effective discussion. And it's a little dense. Plus, I've got other things going. So I'm looking forward maybe in about early November sometime, if he's available. In any event, I think that's about it on my list. Let me double check. Yeah, I think that's it. Check back for more Wujos as we get closer to some of the temporal markers that are more locally or more temporally close to the actual breaking events. I'll let you know. So in other words, the pedophilia scandal is a long-term temporal marker. As it breaks, it might, in my mind, it might take months to continue unraveling. I just have no way of knowing. We know that during that period of time, gold and silver will take off, will break out of the boxes or the break through the chains that have been imposed on them by the Kabbalists. But some other temporal markers are, you know, when they pop up, I know that, oh, within 2 or 3 days, something's going to happen. Here it might be, like I say, a couple of months because it was in the shorter-term data. Anyway, so check back for more Wujos. Sorry this rambling was a bit long. But I really seriously, you know, you got to look at your body and what it's going to take to get through all of this. And the idea that you're going to be carrying around 35 pounds extra weight as a good thing, I find a rather remarkable statement. I guess that's it. See you guys later.